Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Ataxia experts Conrad Van Harden and Katie Forster. So tell me a little bit about your work with Ataxia.
I'm Conrad Van Harden. I'm the president of the foundation in Canada that we started in 1998. Ataxia telangiectasia is a very rare genetic disease, I guess, and it's a combination of both parents passing on one mutated AT gene to one of their children.
So how does this gene typically affect a person when it's mutated?
It affects the DNA repair. So as a carrier myself, my DNA repair will be not as strong as the average person either. So the susceptibility to some of the cancers, genetic cancers, is higher. That's very common. And otherwise, you don't, they're one in 30,000 people has the mutated AT gene and they'll never know it. But some of the, there's four or five genetic cancers are directly related back to a mutated gene.
So, are there any potential treatments available?
If you have two parents that are carrying a mutated gene and they both pass one of those genes on to their child, then they actually get the disease. Right now, there's some treatments to help quality of life for children with AT, but there's no cures or treatments as such. There's some of the children, because their immunoglobulins are very low, at a very young age, 1, 2, 3 years old, will start immunoglobulin treatments.
So, can you give me an overview of the foundation's work?
Our son was born in 1984, and he seemed pretty much normal at birth. And when he was 4 or 5 years old, he started, you know, he had some speech issues a little bit, and then when he was always leaning over to one side. And then when he was 5 years old riding his bike, he started to lose his balance quite a bit. So we started doing some neurology work, and we went back and forth with the doctors for 2 years before one of the doctors recognized some telangiectasias in his eyes, this little blood vessels in your eyes, really red. And that's what triggered off the diagnosis at that time. So and after that happened, we spent the next just about 2 years trying to find an organization or find more people with the same condition, because it was so rare. And then Barbara Walters had a program on 2020, and we saw that and we said, hey. So we contacted the foundation, the AT Children's Project of Florida, and got information on the disease. And they have Johns Hopkins Hospital has a clinic for AT, specializing with 2 doctors. So we flew to Baltimore, to Johns Hopkins Hospital, and had a diagnosis confirmed there. And then from there, we decided, you know, what can we do to help the organization? So we started fundraising in Canada with a walkathon initially. And Katie can fill you in some of the more other fundraising things we do.
Yeah, so throughout the years, the walkathons kept on every year for 16 years. In addition to the walkathon, we also hold a rare disease evening, which This year will be on February 28th, Saturday. We also do a highway road cleanup. We have a crew that we get together and we clean road ditches for about 4 or 5 hours. So there's money raised for that. We also do a fishing derby, which I believe is 5 years ongoing, and then a golf tournament as well. So that is another awareness piece that we've connected in the community. We've had tremendous support. Again, initially it was to raise the awareness piece, and now we are still raising awareness, but we do need the funds for research. We also do a pancake breakfast at a Santa Claus parade in our local community in Fort McLeod. And then lastly is a marathon, which is a huge one as well. We do get a group together from here in the area, and we go to Florida. We run, you know, the half marathon, full marathon. It's kind of a weekend thing. We also run in California at the Disneyland Marathon. So the fundraising is continuous. We have tremendous support, you know, and in there, too, we do AT hearts. We sell hearts, AT Hope hearts for $2 in schools. We've done that in local businesses as well. So, again, it's endless, but we are staying very positive, and together the fundraising definitely is needed and does help. So that's some of the actual fundraising that we do.
So,
And then with the walk-a-thon, the top most we've raised for one walk-a-thon is $65,000. Its average is probably $50,000, and the golf tournaments are around that $20,000 mark, and so is the fishing derby week. So this year alone, we raised our family foundation basically $160,000 in Canada.
So, in your time working with AT, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
Initially, it was to connect that there was other families in North America with the disease or in Canada with the disease. We have one member on our board from Montreal who has a son with the disease. And then through that gave us a positive outlook that something was being done, and to help with fundraising and research and seeing what some of the links the AT genes have with cancer research and Parkinson's, it gives us, I think, some optimism that if we can cure AT or help genetically fix AT, it'll make a big difference in cancer treatments and everything.
So, if you could send any one message about the importance of the work of the foundation, what would it be?
I think I would say anybody that is struggling with a rare disease of other kinds or of ataxia telangiectasia, connect with people that are researching it and bring awareness to it. And the more awareness we get, the more fundraising dollars will come forward. And with that, we can do more research. Like some of the mainstream diseases get a lot of federal funding or other funding versus the small rare diseases.
What are the next steps for the foundation?
We kind of went over, Katie can do that. There's about 4 research trials we're doing right now that we're getting so close to doing actual trials, and some are quality of life improvements. Swallowing is one, eye movement is one, because children with ataxia telangiectasia have a hard time with aspiration and also a hard time focusing.
Yeah, so there's a few drug trials that the AT Children's Project have been working with. So Artane is one. It's an existing drug that helps with movement. We have NP001, and it's we're not involved with it yet, but we're hoping to soon. There's a gentleman of the California University that's working with AIDS right now. The drug NP001 is already filed with the FDA and has been tested in humans. But we're hoping if we can use this drug, it would potentially slow the progression. The genetic version of the drug is used in Thailand to assist with AIDS right now, so that they know that one's being tested. In addition, there are DNA sequencing projects, so the AT Children's Project is working and hoping to create a larger project with about 500 patients with the ATG reproduction, so that's ongoing. We did, I think 2 years ago, have 23andMe do a lot of surveys and tests with AT families, so that was one project. We're very close on having an animal that has AT, and hopefully we can, you know, see where that goes. So that's some of the drug trials that we currently have.
Like with most research, to get an animal model to do the research is pretty hard to do. But where you've had a few different ones that were altered genetically to become ataxic or have some of the symptoms of ataxia telangiectasia, but now we're really, really close to have an animal model that we can do research with.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. To my mind, it's exactly the right approach when someone first discovers about a condition, that someone they care about has been affected by a given condition, to reach out to others within the community. Chances are, you'll find that you're not facing it alone. It may take some searching, may take some time, but the fact of the matter is, working with others, building a support base, that's where it all begins. But from there, taking the knowledge that you've gained about the condition and your own efforts just to improve things and seeing how many others can benefit. That's why I love stories like the Ataxia Foundation. They've been reaching out, trying to make things better for those affected, just raising awareness and recognizing the importance of others working on similar conditions, recognizing the value in their work and how they can benefit from each other. The fact is, in disability life, it is all about community. It's about strengthening those affected with any given condition, helping them to recognize their own strength, their own place within the community, providing support, being there as an outlet. Great step towards recognizing that there is true and meaningful potential within these individuals who have been affected. The fact is, our efforts must always be based in community, learning from each other's ideas, each other's insights, working in partnerships. True, different disability groups tend to have different methodologies as to how to get there. But the fact is, the ideal is always the same. To make things the best they can be for individuals with disabilities. And the truth is, somebody tells you there's no hope. 9 times out of 10, it's the wrong answer. Just look until you find substantive information. You find some direction, some recourse, just to see if there's anything that can be done to improve quality of life. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Winter weather is unpredictable. Drive with extra care this winter. It takes longer to stop in winter conditions. Reduce your speed and increase the distance between your vehicle and others. Walkers, joggers, and cyclists should continue to be safe and be seen. Wear bright and reflective clothing so you are more visible to drivers. This important message is from the Windsor-Essex County Injury Prevention Coalition, reminding everyone to slow down, stay alert, and stay in control.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Conrad Van Heerden and Katie Forster, ataxia experts. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Amy Talbot from Creativity Explored. Tell me a little bit about Creativity Explored.
Creativity Explored is a visual arts center where artists with developmental disabilities create, exhibit, and sell their art. We were founded about 33 years ago and continue to exist using basically the same model.
So, can you give me an overview of what the model is?
Oh, okay. You want me to really go into detail. Okay.
Yes.
We operate a studio and a gallery, two studios and a gallery, where during the course of any year, about 135 artists with developmental disabilities work. We operate two studios where during the day in our larger studio, 55 to 65 people are making art, and in the second studio we have about 20 people making art. The artists vary in range in age from age 22 to, I think our oldest person now is 91. They come from mostly the San Francisco, but there are a couple folks who live a little further out of San Francisco in the Bay Area. All the artists working in the studio have developmental disabilities, and some of the artists have additional physical disabilities and or psychiatric disabilities. We also operate a gallery that is adjacent to our main studio in San Francisco, and when people come into the gallery, when visitors come into the gallery, one of the wonderful things about Creativity Explored is that they're able to come back into the studio and interact with the artists as they're working, meet the artists, and watch the art as it's being created. That's a lot of fun for somebody who's interested in art, to be able to get to know the artist who created the piece that they're interested in buying. Our primary focus is to help people with developmental disabilities who are interested develop a meaningful art practice and pursue a career in art if they wish to do so. Our focus is on fine arts. We don't do a lot of crafts, although that can be, you know, a fine line to distinguish between the two. Our focus is definitely on the fine arts, not so much on product production.
So, in working with these individuals with disabilities, do you use any modified equipment for the art?
Oh, sure. It depends on what their needs are. We've gotten pretty creative about, you know, using duct tape on paintbrushes, using Velcro to help people who need assistance keeping the brush in their hand. We have some tables that slant, you know, depending on what angle a person can work best at. For the most part, though, the people who, we don't have a lot of people who require adaptive equipment at this point. We did several years ago, but some of those folks' other physical needs got greater than we were able to successfully really work with in the studio. One of the questions that, you know, we're always asking is, depending on how much assistance, physical assistance a person needs, the question then becomes, well, whose art is it? Adaptive equipment, you bet, that works fine for us, it works fine for the artists that we work with, but we're pretty careful about the level of physical assistance that we would provide an artist, because then the line between, you know, who is the creating artist gets a little murky.
So, in your time working with Creativity Explored, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
One, I was really, really proud when we had some artists included in a show at the Berkeley Art Museum in Berkeley, California. It was for people who have never been in that museum. It's a very solid museum. It's architecturally very dense concrete, and it's obviously an institution. And it physically it's a little bit imposing, And it's obvious that this museum is not a gallery. And we had 9 artists exhibiting in that space in 2011. And that was a real milestone for us. The artists were very, very proud to be there. The public was very, very responsive to their work. And it was exciting. My success stories are when I realized the role that Creativity Explored as an organization has played in an artist's success, whether it be the creation of art and providing some focus, or whether it be because our promotional efforts have made that artist's work more visible so that a greater number of the public can see it. And I guess that's what my success is. I measure that success. I also measure the success of our organization when I watch parents or family members who never expected their family member to be a successful artist, and they bask in their family member's success, and that feels really, really good to us as the director of the organization.
So, if you could send any one message about the need for inclusion in the arts, what would you say?
Oh, that art has many, many looks and faces, and that we need to really get away from labeling art because of the maker. The art is a really, really important way of communicating for many, many people, regardless of who they are and where they come from. Many people use art to communicate their past experiences, their cultural differences, their cultural similarities, who they are, where they've been, and art is a powerful, powerful means of doing that, to build bridges, to make us really respectful of diversity. And I think it's really, really important for the contemporary art world to look at all of those things and understand that it's all important, and that's part of the beauty of art and what it can do for all of us in all societies, is to bring about a much greater understanding of who people are.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
The point Amy made about how it is that it has to be the art of the person with the disability reminds me of the principle of scaffolding, which basically says you give the person the support they need, but don't coddle them to the point at which they feel they're not contributing, and that they're not contributing in a meaningful way. This is a principle that I've gone through a few times with past guest Samantha Newmarch, who once did a very simple thing, helped an individual with a disability just to get through a door a little easier. Was it a simple thing? Or, on some level, was it showing a sign of respect, right to access, the recognition that all should be included with equal opportunities? It's no different in the arts. Individuals with disabilities have something to express, something maybe to brighten the world a little bit. And why is it we as a society wouldn't do all that we can to encourage this? All that matters in art is, did it reach us? Did it have some sort of an impact? Are we better for having seen this? Are we more cultured? Do we gain something from it? It doesn't matter if the artist has limited muscle control or visual impairment or a developmental disability. The potential to create, the potential to express, is the same regardless of the disability. Because art comes from something inside. Fact is, there is no disability anywhere that can take away the human soul's gift for reaching out to others, and the desire to express oneself through their chosen medium. Whether it be an athlete with a disability, a musician with a disability, or someone simply standing beside them. Recognizing one's own skills or the skills of another can be a great first step, because once you acknowledge the skills, the potential is there, you can start asking the question, how can I work with this? What steps can I take to get this message across, to get what this person wants to say to the community? If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, the numeral 4, at gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Truth of the matter is, folks, that no matter how a person communicates or what medium they choose to express their talents or their skills, if they're playing to those skills, if they recognize what their capabilities are and work from there, develop based on their interests, previous experience, their skills, their capabilities, they can start to build in greater and greater measure. First step, however, is recognizing, sitting down, and asking, what do I really want to accomplish in the world? What can I create? In an ideal world, what would I choose to do? Many individuals with disabilities have asked these questions. Terry Fox, perfect example. He asked himself, I'm sure, what do I want to tell the public about my condition? What would I say to them? And how can I bring this message to the forefront of their minds? His answer was to run. Very far, very fast. And he worked, he pushed himself, but he got it there. He's a great historical example. However, it can be a matter of reaching large crowds of people, or it can be a matter of simply opening the eyes of one person. Because when a person realizes for the very first time that those with disabilities around them have strengths and have gifts to contribute to the world, that's not something that goes away. It can change your outlook. You might see one person with a disability running in a marathon, for example. Then you might see another, different type of disability, but not be so quick to underestimate their skills, their potentials. Because if one person with one type of condition can create something, who's to say that another can't create something as well? Might be different, might be similar. All depends on the individual. But what's universal is that we all have potentials, whether we have a disability or not. We all have our skills and our hopes and our dreams, things we want to accomplish in this world. And a disability should not in any way serve as a deterrent. The great disability credo, I can do anything you can, it's just a question of how, reigns true. I find this to be especially so in things like disability arts, because may be a question of modifying something slightly. But after you give that artist their outlet, it's up to them. And they will create. It'll be something unique. And I maintain something wonderful. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.